නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. So as you all can remember, we were discussing Alagaddupama Sutta, which is one of the very interesting suttas coming in the Majjhima Nikaya, where Buddha gave a detailed account of certain aspects, where how certain wrong views can arise in one's mind, and again questioning monks, because the teaching has come through the recitation or from oral tradition. So Buddha is making sure that monks are maintaining the correct form, and there is no nothing was misunderstood. So likewise, certain deep aspects of the Dhamma being discussed in this sutta. And the name was given because when we are trying to understand the Dhamma, Buddha mentioned that we have to have a proper attitude in one's mind. So we are learning Dhamma to get some benefit from it, to develop our spiritual qualities, and to correct ourselves, to recognize defilements and remove defilements, and not for sort of disparaging others or looking down others or go to debates with others. So that is not the idea. Rather, we are using the Dhamma so that we can live according to the Dhamma. That is one aspect Buddha highlight by giving the simile of the snake. And then the simile of the raft actually indicates that one has to prepare, one has to learn, one has to recognize, memorize, and all these things are there. And then using one's own effort, one needs to practice. So then only one would be able to cross to the other shore. And once crossed to the shore, to the other shore, so one doesn't need to carry the raft on one's shoulder. Rather, one can keep it aside and then continue one's path. So similarly, Buddha mentioned the Dhamma also like that. So we have to learn, we have to understand, we have to practice, we have to put a lot of effort. And ultimately, when one becomes an Arahant, he can abandon even the Dhamma. So in that sense, Dhamma is like a raft. And Buddha mentioned about certain other aspects, like the how certain wrong, pernicious views can arise in one's mind. So what are the reasons for that? So that was discussed. And then certain aspects of the Arahant that we have discussed last week. So why he's called a person who has a crossbar has been lifted. And then how trench has been filled. And then how pillar has been uprooted. And then how whose banner is lowered. Now these are very interesting ways, using various similes, the mindset of the Arahant, how Buddha has explained. Say, for example, the last one, when one is becoming more and more wise, and he's abandoning the self-view, he's abandoning the conceit, I am. And as a result of that, so there is no conceit remaining in his mind. And basically, so he's not going to show off, he's not going to look down the others. So his banner has lowered. So typically people want to show off, typically they want to come to the show that they are a very important person, VIP. So that's the kind of a mentality that people would have. But here Buddha mentioned a noble one whose banner is lowered, whose burden is lowered, who is unfettered, and all defilements are now uprooted, including the conceit. Till the conceit is available, one tries to indicate, one tries to highlight, one tries to sort of show off. So all these things are there. But when conceit is completely uprooted, so he becomes a noble living being, a kind of a humble human being, and that is represented here. And then further, as the last point onto this discussion, Buddha adds that the consciousness of the Arahant is untraceable. So typically it is mentioned as Anidassana Vijnana or Appatittita Vijnana, where The consciousness of the Arahant is untraceable, unestablished, and there is nothing, no nama, rupa, name, and form is represented in his consciousness. So, as a result of that, if anyone is trying to locate it, anyone is trying to trace it, so then it is impossible. So, the Buddha mentioned here, when the gods with Indra, with Brahma, and with Pajapati seek a bhikkhu who is thus liberated in mind, they do not find anything of which they could say the consciousness of one thus gone is supported by this. So that consciousness is unestablished. Appatitita vijnana. Now, after mentioning all these, some deep aspects of the Dhamma and even the practice, now Buddha inform that certain people are misrepresenting him. Now, like in the whole sutta, the whole theme was because of the wrong view which Venerable Aritta was having. So that means monks can sometimes have wrong views, and they even proclaim it, they even preach it. Then others also start having that wrong view. So that will be quite dangerous, quite detrimental to the Dhamma. And sometimes if one is thinking, okay, there is a person here, there is an individual here, there is a being here, so that the Buddha is talking of an annihilation of a being, annihilation of a human being, annihilation of a person. So that is a completely wrong misrepresentation of the Buddha, that thinking that there is a person, an individual, a self, a being, is completely depending on the misunderstanding, depending on the ignorance, avijja. So till avijja is remaining, so one may perceive as oneself. One may perceive as a person, as an individual, as a self. But when ignorance is slowly abandoned, so that self-view and that, say, a self-appropriation, as say, the sense of I, the conceit I am, so all these things slowly, slowly diluted. Now, that is what Buddha highlights here. So, if someone is telling that he teaches the annihilation, the destruction, the extermination of an existing being, so that means that particular person is misrepresenting the Tathagata, the Buddha. And here, interestingly, Buddha mentioned bhikkhus, both formally and now, what I teach is suffering and the cessation of suffering. Dukkameva upajjang upajjamano upajjati, dukkha niruddhamana niruddhati. So this is a repeated stock phrase. Sometimes we can recognize from various suttas. So Buddha again and again highlighted, if there is something which is arising, that is nothing but suffering. If something is ceasing, something is fading away, something is disappearing, that is nothing but suffering. Now, when we are practicing Kayanupassana, so we are trying to understand the Rupakhand, Rupa Upadanakhand. So that is the form aggregate subject to clinging. When we are practicing Vedanupassana, we are trying to understand the feeling aggregate, which is also subjected to clinging. When we are practicing Chittanupassana, we are trying to understand the consciousness aggregate, and sometimes we can even say the Sankhara, the formations aggregate, and how they are arising, how they are passing away, how they are changing. So all these things are very much through the experience that we are trying to understand. And on the other hand, when one is practicing Dhammanupassana, all different aggregates are again and again revisited. So it's a fair, thorough understanding of all these different aggregates. So by understanding this, what one is understanding is nothing but suffering. So Panchupadana Khanda, that means the five clinging aggregates, are the one Buddha mentioned as the first noble truth, the suffering. So it is not mere kind of a dogmatic statement. Rather, when one is practicing, one may understand, okay, if something is appearing, if something is arising, definitely it is subject to change. Definitely it is oppressed by arising and passing away. Definitely it is going to be completely ceased. So this is the nature. So these are inevitable characteristics of whatever is conditioned. So if one has that thorough understanding, so then one know if whenever he notice, whenever he trace something is arising, he know okay, again the suffering is arising. A representative of the suffering, an agent of the suffering is arising. And he know definitely, okay, this is going to pass away, this is going to change. Because it is quite certain. So Buddha again and again highlights, therefore, even now, even formally, what I am mentioning is that suffering is arising and then suffering is passing away. If others abuse, revile, scold and harass the Tathagata for that. Now even certain people can abuse Buddha or challenge Buddha regarding this, and Buddha here mentioned if they are doing so, Tathagata doesn't have any kind of bitterness, any annoyance, dejection of the heart. So Buddha is unwavering, he has that tadi, the unwavering quality. And then if someone is respecting, if someone is honoring, reverence, everything, still Buddha is not going to be elated. He is not feels so much delight, joy or elation of the heart. So he remains in the middle, he remains calm, quiet, peaceful. And on the other hand, Buddha mentioned, so what they are respecting, what they are venerating, or what they are abusing, is to these five clinging aggregates, so which I have clean seen clearly. So what people can trace, what people can see, is nothing but five aggregates. To that now they are venerating. Okay, you are so and so, you are a great teacher, you are so nice, you are wise, so you are completely a fool, you are completely ignorant. So likewise, when someone is abusing or praising, so that is how we are experiencing through our senses, that is nothing but the five aggregates. So this is a very interesting and very profound argument. So when we are going through certain amount of praise or blame, if we can put this argument into the mind, then probably we may not take whatever the argument or whatever the abuse so individually or so personally. And here Buddha highlights that also to the monks. And he highlights, therefore because if others abuse, revile, scold and harass you, on that account you should not entertain any annoyance, bitterness or dejection of the heart. Now the same thing which Buddha mentioned about himself, now he is advising to the monks. And Buddha asked them also to behave in the same manner. And he again mentioned as the last, they perform such services as they are for us in regard to this which is earlier was fully understood. Now they have completely understood about the five aggregates, maybe through the Satipatthana. And to that what I have understood, now they are giving a lot of praising or they are putting a lot of blames, abusing, etc. But I have understood it. This is a very interesting way of how one is using the vipassana knowledges to safeguard oneself or to maintain an unwavering mind. So immediately it is not that one is trying to practice vipassana there, rather one is reminding oneself, I have fully penetrated these five aggregates, I have fully comprehended these five aggregates, I have done some practice. So there is no person here, there is no being here. These are mere aggregates. So then why should I worry? Then why should I take those things so personally? So this is a very interesting way of convincing oneself, challenging oneself. If in case the self-view is arising, in case the conceit I am is arising in oneself. Now again Buddha has further highlighted that, mentioning to the monks that these things are not yours. The five clinging aggregates are not yours. So you have mistakenly grasped them. Therefore, because whatever is not yours, abandon it. When you have abandoned it, that will lead to your welfare, happiness for a long time. And what is not yours? So that is the material aggregate. That is the feeling aggregate. That is the perception aggregate.
that is the formations aggregate, and that is the consciousness aggregate. Now actually here the terms are going more towards the aggregates. So all these different aggregates Buddha mentioned is not yours. So abandon them. So how to abandon? So that is also very interesting. Now when we are talking about the Dhamma, so we can simply superficially think, okay, Buddha is asking to abandon. Abandon, just relinquish. So I'm going to relinquish. But still mind go and grasp, mind go and hold. Still I feel I am. Still I feel there is a person within me. That's an individual who is quite very important, who is better than the others. So likewise, we still have the personality view. We still have the conceit I am. How to abandon that? So that is again and again continuing in one's practice. So probably you can remember, I think I have mentioned in the Kemaka Sutta, so Venerable Kemaka highlights, even when one is not recognizing any of these aggregates as a person, as an individual, as a being, still the sense of I am can be available till one becomes an arahant. So because this conceit I am is very deeply rooted, so again and again one has to look at it, investigate it, recognize when it is arising. So it's a long-term process. So one can become a Sotapanna, Sakadagami, all these lower levels, still the conceit I am is available. Even on that levels, one does not immediately recognize the form aggregates as me, myself, feeling aggregates as me, myself, perceptions aggregate as me, myself, or say consciousness aggregate as myself. But still the sense of I am can happen. So that is in a way quite challenging. And then, so Buddha highlights that, informing the monks that whatever is not yours, don't attach that. Because what do you think? If people carried off the grass, sticks, branches and leaves in this Jeta grove, or burned them, or did what they liked with them, would you think people are carrying us off or burning us or doing what they like with us? Now this is another way of Buddha mentioning the non-self. Now he is asking, now you are surrounded by various grass, trees, etc. in this monastery. So someone is coming and cutting a tree. Someone is extracting certain grass. Do you feel that they are extracting me, they are cutting me, they are harming me, they are harming myself? So then monks are answering, no, Venerable Sir. Why not? Because that is neither ourselves nor what belongs to ourselves. So one very well know, okay, this grass is not me. This grass available in the Jetavana monastery is not me. This grass available at Nisarnavani is not me. This trees available at Nisarnavani is not me. Okay, in yourself you can recognize, okay, this bed is not me. This table is not me. This cup is not me. This laptop is not me. So likewise, if we can recognize, okay, none of these belong to me. None of these are myself. But typically what happens is we have kind of a possessive attitude. So we think that these things belong to me. This is my laptop, this is my car, this is my husband, this is my wife, this is my children, this is my house. So all these possessions are in our mind. So whenever someone is harming them, then we are deeply troubled. So this argument is therefore very, very strong. What Buddha is highlighting here, very, very strong, because the simile given, say, even if they are destroying these trees, even if they are destroying the grass, so the monks may not feel that they are destroying me, myself. So similarly Buddha mentioned, okay, so these five aggregates are similarly not you. These five aggregates are similarly not yours. So understanding that is the real challenge actually. So how one can deeply understand to that level? Actually, probably you can remember we were discussing one interesting incident happened with the Adimutta Samanera. So in the Adimutta Samanera, it is recorded in the Adimutta Theragata. So he's a young Samanera, but an Arahant. So he was going through a forest, but caught by the bandits. So once they caught by the bandit, so now they are going to kill him. Because they want to make a kind of a sacrifice to take some treasure or something like that. So they are going to use Venerable Adibutta as a sacrifice. But Venerable Adibutta was not shocked. He is maintaining his calm senses. His faculties are not disturbed. And he is with a pleasant mood. Even though now they are going to kill, he still is with a smile. That's quite interesting. So when others are going through such situation, they are screaming, they are pleading, they are trying to escape. All these struggles are there. But here, Venerable Adimutta, on the opposite, he is maintaining very quiet, very calm, very relaxed attitude, even though now they are going to kill. Now this was a question to the man, to the head thief, and he is asking how you are doing this. And they are very interested in the same type of argument Venerable Adimutta also informing. And he is saying, Tinakatta samang lokam yada panyaya passati. So I am looking at this whole world as like grass and sticks. Nothing else. There is no person here. There is no being here. There is nothing substantial here. So I am looking at the whole thing, I am perceiving like that. So these five aggregates are like that. And Sankhara Vibhavissanti, all these formations are coming and going, they are rising and passing away. And they doesn't belong to me. So when one see that now things as mere Sankhara, mere formations, and one is not adding to that, one is not preparing further, one is not fabricating further, so then they become mere fabrications, or rather mere sankhara. Whatever rising, now you are not fabricating, you are not adding your stuff, you are not adding your likes and dislikes onto it. So they may come and they may go by their own, they may happen due to their own causes and conditions, and they may simply pass away. So when one is looking at that, looking in that way, so there is no any kind of grasping, there is no any delusion. Now he is completely free. His mind is not burdened. And when that is said, so these people were quite shocked. So what a kind of understanding this person is having. So it's very interesting actually. These things are practically has happened during the Buddha's time. So certain arahants have come across such kind of life-threatening situations, but still they were maintaining a very calm, relaxed mindset. Now in this Dhamma, the Dhamma well proclaimed by me, thus is clear, open, evident and free of patchwork. Now it is a very complete Dhamma. So Buddha's teaching, when one start practicing, the whole thing become well connected. At the beginning, you can't understand why Buddha mentioned like this, why Buddha mentioned like that, so how this connect to the other thing. So likewise, we can't map the whole thing. But as we are continuing, then we understand, okay, why Buddha has mentioned like this. When certain suttas are again and again we are sort of discussing, we can understand how each component is connected with the other component or other teaching. How one sutta resembles with another sutta, match with another sutta. So likewise, the things become more and more apparent. So as we are continuing with the Dhamma. So therefore, Dhamma is well proclaimed. I mean, if we can't understand that feature, that means still we further needs to practice, or we further needs to study. And as we further and further study, as we further and further practice, continue our path, then slowly all these things fit together and the doubts are abandoned, so one become more and more confident. So there is no future round of manifestation in the case of those bhikkhus who are arahants. Now again, further talking about the arahants, so here arahants are the ones, we can say, the supreme. They are completely liberated, so their taints are completely destroyed, and they have completed the holy life, and they have done what they need to be done, laid down the burden, reached their own goal, destroyed all fetters, and are completely liberated through final knowledge. Now, here we can recognize where Buddha mentioned in the Pali. Evang swakhato bhikkave maya dhammo uttano vivato pakasito chinna pilotiko. Evang swakhate bhikkave maya dhamme uttane vivate pakasite chinna pilotiki. Yete bhikkhu arahanto khinasava usitavanto katakaraniya ohita bhara anuppatta sadatta parikhina bhava sanyojana sammadanya vimutta vattang tesang natti panyapana. Now these are very very strong words actually. So how Buddha is actually highlighting, so evang swakhate bhikkave maya dhamme, so my this dispensation, the teaching, the dhamma is well proclaimed, and it is very very well explained, and there is nothing hidden, there are no any kind of hidden dogmatic things, everything is well explained. And if one is practicing that and accomplish that, come to a kind of a fulfillment, and then Buddha mentioned, so that he is an arahant, all the asavas, the influxes are uprooted, and he completed the brahmacharya, the celibate living, and he has done the task, and he has put aside the burden, and sort of one has achieved one's goal systematically, and parikkhina bhava sanyojano, so all the fetters are completely destroyed, sammadanya vimutta, so fully understood what needs to be understood. Vattantesan natti panyapanaya. Now you can't recognize him as a person, because he himself is not feeling as a person, as an individual, as a self. So even though you may name him, look at him, all these things are there. So he understood, okay, these are mere aggregates. So they are venerating to these aggregates. They are abusing to these aggregates. So this is a very interesting way that Buddha explained his Dhamma. And then now he is talking about a non-returner. So in this well-proclaimed Dhamma, if one is continuing one's practice and have abandoned the five lower fetters. So as you know, there are 10 fetters explained in the Dhamma. There are five lower fetters. Sakkaya ditti, vichikicca, silabbata, paramasa are the three fetters abandoned by at the sotapanna level, at the stream minna level. So that means the personality view, skeptical doubt, silabbata, paramasa, various rites and rituals, which are not contributing towards the liberation. So one has abandoned all these things. Further, when one becomes an anagami, one has abandoned the kamaraga, so that means the lust, any kind of lustful desire one is having with respect to all different sense objects. And patiga is the kind of ill will one is having. So all that five fetters are abandoned in this non-return, anagami, so abandoned the five lower fetters. And now this particular person only may reborn in a pure abode, and he is a non-return, he may not come back to this world. And there he attained the final parinibbana. Now actually Buddha is talking about various attainments here as the last thing in this sutta. So it's very much like he is promising, very much like he is confirming. If one is practicing, okay, yes, these things are possible. So it's giving us a very positive feedback in a way. He's giving us a very positive feeling. So the Dhamma is well explained, it is everything is quite clear. Now if one is practicing, okay, these things are possible. Suppose someone is showing you a clear map, everything is properly indicated there, names are there, roads are there, distance is well explained, all the landmarks are indicated, and it is very, very clear. And he is telling, okay, I have gone, I have used this particular map, I have achieved it. So you too can use this map and go to that particular place. So now if one is continuing in that path according to that map, so one may come across certain milestones, certain landmarks. Now he is quite sure, okay, I am in the correct track, I am in the correct path. So further and further he is continuing, and he is more and more sure, more and more confident, okay, I am continuing the same path which Buddha has proclaimed, which Arahants have used. So that is very much like more and more one is continuing in one's path. At the beginning actually we can't really understand what we are doing, and we are simply meditating, where we are going, and there are various doubts, and certain monks are telling one thing, certain other monks are telling another thing, one book is telling one thing, another book is telling another thing. So likewise things are sometimes confusing, and you yourself don't have much understanding, and you are not confident about what you are doing. So you are going to various teachers, you are reading so many books, because we are not sure what we are doing, we are not sure what is right. But as we are continuing further and further, so those doubts become less and less, and you become more and more confident of your own practice. It is not that someone's practice, rather your own practice is giving you a lot of confidence. And it is giving you a lot of peacefulness to the mind. So mind become more and more clear, less and less doubts, less and less proliferation. And you feel quite peaceful. So then you are confident, yes, the path is correct, I am heading towards the proper path. So likewise, now he is talking about the third level. Abandoned three fetters are all stream enterers. No, actually before that, the Sakadagami, so there he has very much completely abandoned the three fetters and attenuated lust and hate. In the Sakadagami level, nothing has abandoned in the sense of when compared to the previous one. At the stream inner level, three fetters are abandoned. At the Sakadagami level, another two fetters are somewhat attenuated, diluted. And the stream inner level, three fetters are abandoned. So, but he is still continuing the path, he is still continuing his practice, he is further further restraining himself, and he no longer subject to perdition, he is bound for deliverance and headed towards the enlightenment, headed towards Nibbana. He is quite sure about it. And now he is talking the other two, they are the Dhamma followers and the faith followers, Dhamma followers, Dhamma Anusari, faith followers, the Saddha Anusari. Now here actually, now as you know, when you are practicing the Dhamma, when you start practicing meditation, so at the early stage, so you are in a kind of a struggle where your mind is scattered and there is no mindfulness and there is no any kind of samadhi or wisdom. So it's very difficult. But as you continue, now you have certain amount of mindfulness, now you have certain amount of samadhi, now you have certain amount of wisdom. Now suppose you are continuing the path, now you recognize, okay, now mindfulness is available. So this is mindfulness. Now concentration is also available. Now I sometimes have a very peaceful state of mind. No any kind of distraction. Mind is very, very peaceful. Sometimes even go to a kind of a blissful state. Sometimes mind is very one-pointed. So all these qualities now you distinctly recognize. Okay, this is samadhi. This is concentration. This is the collectedness of the mind. And sometimes you are quite effortful. I want to do it. You have kind of an unwavering effort. So you recognize the quality of effort in your mind. And saddha. And the faith. And you are quite confident. Yes, Buddha has proclaimed Dhamma properly. And his path is correct. I need to practice further. So likewise, a lot of faith is there. Your confidence is there. You are trusting the Buddha. You are trusting the Dhamma. You are trusting the Noble Sangha. So that faith that you understand happening within you. And sometimes your mind has certain amount of penetrative knowledge. So on that day, even the other tasks you can do quite quickly because mind is very sharp. So others can't see the solution, but you can immediately understand the solution. So at that time you understand, okay, my mind has a certain skill developed. This is wisdom. So likewise, in our mind, so these five spiritual faculties are to be developed. And when those faculties are being developed, now you recognize distinctly, okay, this is wisdom, this is concentration, this is faith, this is effort, this is mindfulness. So likewise, distinctly you can recognize these faculties. So very much like at that level, one can say, one is a Dhammanusari, Sansaddhanusari. Yeah, the faculties are fairly developed, but you are not yet a stream winner. Not yet a stream winner, but faculties are distinctly understandable, recognizable. So that is, one can say, okay, now you have achieved to some level of Dhammanusari, Saddhanusari. So those bhikkhus who are Dhamma followers or faith followers are all headed for enlightenment. So bhikkhus, the Dhamma will proclaim and the Dhamma will... those who have sufficient faith in me, sufficient love for me, are all headed for heaven. That is the last one actually Buddha mentioned here. So actually it's from Dhammanusari. So in the Dhammanusari one actually is more... continuing the path, keeping the wisdom faculty as his governing factor. Now, among the five faculties, different faculties can come forward. They can play the leading role. Now, in a Dhammanusari character, which plays the leading role is the wisdom. So, he is... headed by the wisdom. He is investigating, he is trying to understand, he is certain exploring. So he is again and again continuing the path because he has that kind of a curiosity. He has that kind of investigative attitude. He wants to explore. He wants to understand. He wants to comprehend. He wants to fully comprehend. So that is the one sort of giving him a lot of fuel, encouragement. On the other hand, the faith follower, so he has a lot of faith. He has a lot of faith towards the Buddha, a lot of faith towards the Dhamma, a lot of faith towards the Sangha. So he is quite sure, I am going to do it. Buddha is the Buddha. So he is fully enlightened. I have no doubt about it. Dhamma is well proclaimed. I have no doubt about it. Sangha has these noble qualities. I have no doubt about it. So likewise, he is continuing the path with... like very heartfelt faith, and he's more sometimes can be even emotional, little bit of that kind of component may be there. He's a faith character, and with a lot of encouragement coming through his own heart, he's continuing the path. He's the faith follower. And they are the ones ultimately become Sotapanna, stream winner, where the three fetters are completely abandoned. So Buddha mentioned here, the faith follower and the Dhamma follower, they both are headed for enlightenment. So they all are continuing towards the enlightenment. This stream winner, on the other hand, he is quite confident. He is very much now incapable of coming back. So even without the help of another person, he can achieve. He can fulfill the task. Faith follower, Dhamma follower, they are still continuing. They are further and further practicing. They are maybe associating Kalyana Mitras, studying, and all these things are there. So they are like, learning, further and further learning, continuing. So all these things are there. And ultimately, Buddha mentioned, Yete bhikkhu dhamma. Evang swakhate bhikkhave maya dhamme. Uttane vivate pakasite. Chinna pidotike. Yesam mai saddhammattang, pema mattang, sabbete sangha parayanati. So if one is studying the Dhamma, if one is having some kind of a faith on the Buddha, so it's a kind of an assurance here Buddha is giving. So they are, at least they may can go to a heaven. So this is a kind of a may be subjected to various further conditions, because it's mere faith he is still having, mere confidence he is still having, that these things are still sort of wavering. But in case this faith, in case this confidence, if he is continuing, but he is not into the practice, he is not developing the qualities like we discuss, saddha, virya, sati, samadhi, panya, the faith, effort, mindfulness, concentration, wisdom, he is not purposely developing. He is not into that kind of practical development of those qualities. But he has some faith on the Buddha. He has kind of a love towards the Buddha. And he has a lot of confidence in the Dhamma, even though he is not practicing. Now these people, again Buddha mentioned, are headed towards the heaven. You can't assure by the way that they are going to be a Sotapanna or something like that. I mean, if they are continuing, if they are start practicing, then of course there's a potential, there's a possibility. Now they can become a Saddhanusari, they can become a Dhammanusari, then they can become a Sotapanna, then they can become a Sakadagami, then one can become Anagami, and ultimately one can become an Arahant. So this is how we are starting. So we hear the Dhamma, we hear the teaching, and then we have certain kind of respect towards the Buddha, respect towards the Dhamma, respect towards the Sangha. Now we ourselves start a little bit of investigating, we ourselves start a little bit of studying the Dhamma, and we are listening to Dhamma teachings, Dhamma talks. So slowly, then we feel, yes, I need to practice. We feel that I need to put myself into the practice. I need to practically experience this. Now you are slowly, practically trying to develop those spiritual faculties. So when you are continuing that, you come to a level, okay, distinctly you are capable of understanding these spiritual qualities, faculties. At that level, as I said, you can define, okay, very much like in the Dhammanusari level or Saddhanusari level. So likewise, these stages are explained in this sutta. So that ends the sutta, and with that I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon and this series. which we have conducted with related to this Alagaddupama Sutta. And thank you very much for participation. And again, I like to have a small announcement. For several weeks, I won't be able to conduct the session because I am participating some retreats in Australia. So maybe actually on 5th, 12th, 19th, 28th. So that means 4 weeks, this session has to be cancelled. If Jennifer like, probably you can repeat something during that same time. Jennifer, if you like, you can do that. You can play a recorded sutta for those 4 weeks. That's up to you. Yeah, the whole April month of April.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think it is good if you can, we can select 4 sermons. Sometimes I have delivered 4 sermons on a particular theme, or you can select 2-2 or 1-3 or whatever the way, so that complete topic is covered during this month. Because I think we were continuing for about a couple of years now. Probably you can take something which you have discussed some time back. So the others who are new participants can also hear that. Probably we can. I also can help what would be the most, say, a suitable topic. Something like that. I can give you some selections.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you have any question with respect to today's Dhamma sermon, and then I like to open the session for discussion. Yeah. So we have a question from our side. Yeah.
Yes, Bhante, thank you for your teaching. I was wondering, I've had this curiosity before, is that the Buddha has talked about when he was enlightened, he saw his past lives, and there's often reference to such past lives of the Buddha, and then in this sutta it says such as the in verse 47 those who have sufficient love and faith in me are all headed for heaven,
mm-hmm.
and then on verse 44 43, I think. Let's see, 43. It says there, they may there, and let's see, those who have abandoned the 5 lower fetters and are all due to reappear spontaneously in the pure abodes,
mm-hmm.
and there attain a final nibbana without ever returning to this world.
Yeah.
So there's continually these references to those who will return to this world and attain nibbana and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to be suggesting that there is rebirth,
mm-hmm.
and that seems contrary to the Buddha's teaching that that there isn't a future life, that we are actually there's. So the question is, like, what happens when we die? Well, apparently he's saying that, well, we'll be reborn again some other realm.
Yeah. Thing is this. Now, I mean, even though there is no person here, but still we still have the ignorance. So till ignorance is available, so the rebirth process can happen. So that's another completely different, teaching that we are talking here now. So how rebirth going to happen? So the kind of the momentum is within us. So there's a kind of a momentum. So we are again and again, you know, we have this what you call tanha, bhava tanha. We are yearning towards a future event. So mind has that kind of an inclination. So and again, mind has certain amount of ignorance that there is a person here. I am here. So I can't die, I want to live, I want to continue my life. So that kind of a feeling we have, perception we have. So even at the death, so that momentum is still available. So you are abandoning the body here, body may perish, but that momentum continues. I mean, all these are but rising and passing away. So don't take it as a existing, continuing, everlasting self or any kind of substance. But continuation can happen in a rising and passing away level. So from one instance to the other instance, the momentum is take forward, carried forward. Then from that instance to the next instance, the momentum is carried forward. So likewise. Say a runner is running, for example. So the momentum, the speed that he has built up, now he is using even at the next moment. So that momentum he is building up again and again, further and further. So his speed, momentum, he's building up. Now when he's continuing the run, so that momentum is the one continuing, pushing him further and further. Mm-hmm. So likewise, Buddha mentioned, so vinyanam bijang kammang kettang tanha sineho. So vinyana, the consciousness which is arising and passing away, so that becomes the kind of the seed. And you have a fair amount of kamma which are capable of giving you fruits. And still you have the craving which is very much like moisturizing the whole thing. And that is enough for further rebirth.
Okay, but you don't think that it's... because it, maybe it's a problem with language, because when it says this person, this...
it is not a person not here. Not,
but it seems to be saying...
Person.
Those who are following, who are loving me and...
I mean, it's giving kind of a personality view.
They see sufficient love for me, all are headed for heaven. So it seems to be saying those people.
Person. Yes. The thing is, that is a language.
Okay.
So it's very difficult to explain everything in terms of the, very much very accurate, very precise terms.
Mm-hmm.
But here, I mean, there's a kind of common terminology Bhikkhu Bodhi has used here. So you are talking about a particular person. He is a person who has practiced like this.
Yes.
Now he passed away and he reappeared in the heaven. So
yes.
You feel like the same person, now he's reappearing. And,
and
so it's giving a wrong connotation, wrong feeling.
Yeah, but those people that are faithful, they would say, oh, that's very good. I'm going to continue. So sort of an obstacle right there.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you go deeper and you analyze, and then you understand, I mean, that is what the vipassana, no? So what we have discussed so far in the previous chapters, previous paragraphs, so that is what Buddha again and again asking. So is this five aggregates me or myself or something like that? So then monks are answering, no, I mean, this is not possible to say as me or myself. There is nothing substantial. So that is well explained, but in the last few sentences, the way that the thing were translated, giving a wrong type of thing. Yes,
I've heard other Buddhist teachers saying that this was because actually this was a teacher who was a scholar and Pali and Buddhist teachings, the three baskets.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks that was the Buddha's way of skillfully explaining to people of that time who believed in a
reincarnation.
And so this teacher thought that it was
strategy.
Not good for us now, because he seemed to be saying that, well, he was saying that, you know, it's just this life we have to practice with. There aren't any future lives.
Mm-hmm.
We have to do whatever we're going to do with this life, and to think that it's sort of like an eternalist view that this gets put into this. You see what I'm saying? It's
no, we can't come to immediately thinking that, okay, the only this life is available and we are going to completely perish after this. Then we are coming to the Uccedavada, annihilation.
Yeah. But the Buddha didn't teach annihilation or eternalism.
Exactly.
And he was So I'm just.
That's what
so
he.
I'm just suggesting, he this teacher thought that perhaps that the Buddha was using the idea of soul and self as reoccurring in the future. Like
No, not at all.
Okay.
It's completely wrong.
Okay.
Because I mean, if Buddha is talking about a soul, a self, so that is completely contradicting to what we have discussed so far.
Yeah, but he is saying those who have followed me will be appearing.
No, that is simply the terms, simply the words.
Okay.
I mean, it doesn't say that there's a person, there's an individual, there is a soul here. Rather, that is how we are talking. I mean,
okay.
I am talking to you using your name, and I am asking you to do the good things,
yeah.
Then you'll be headed towards the heaven. So
okay.
That is how I have to tell you. I mean, there is no
yeah.
other way. I can't say, okay, I'll ask your material body to do this, and then your perceptions are like this. You may get these feelings, and you have to prepare your mind like this, prepare these formations like this. Then you have to use your faculties like this.
Mm.
It's very difficult to communicate like that.
Yes.
Then simply I'm saying, okay, Venerable Dhamma Vijita, just this is how you need to practice, this is how you need to continue, and then you will be reborn in the heaven. So it's very easy to encourage you.
I also heard from a Thai teacher from the Thai tradition. They're explaining that there is a rebirth, and it sounds more like what you're talking about, of this, the continuation of our karma and our craving, if that's still not extinct, then it continues into a new, and but they're actually saying it goes into the womb of a new life and continued.
Mm.
Is this more in
yeah.
that line?
Yeah, yeah. Very
so it's
much.
More like pollen being transferred from a bee to a flower.
Mm.
It's not a person, but it's just the continuation of craving. And
yeah. Yeah, very much like that.
Samsara
yeah,
is
yeah.
rebirth.
Yeah, the thing is,
so.
You can't say, I mean, now say, when we are using a seed of one tree to plant that seed, and then a new plant is created, okay, born.
Yeah, yeah.
So we can't say, I mean, so this is completely, have no connection with the previous plant. But this is not the same plant either, isn't it?
Right.
So we
plants
can't.
Are sort of a
kind of a continuation is there.
Yeah.
Continuation is there.
Yeah.
But there's a kind of a link also available. But this is a completely new plant.
Yeah.
So likewise, I mean, there are. I mean, these are the terms. I mean, we have to use to communicate.
Yes.
It is not the same person, and again, not the completely new person.
Yes. Yes, I'm sorry, I didn't mean, I don't have a doubt about
yeah, yeah.
this. I'm practicing this life and continuing.
Yeah.
I just, that just comes up for me, and I, you know, wanted to see what your view on.
Yes, yes, yes.
Thank
no
you
problem.
Very much,
yeah, yeah. So actually the teaching that we have discussed so far in this particular sutta, again and again highlighted that if someone is telling that there's I am talking of an annihilation of an existing being,
yes.
So that is one kind of statement that Buddha telling, misrepresentation of the Tathagata.
Yeah.
So if someone is telling, he teaches the annihilation, the destruction, the extermination of an existing being, then that's a complete misrepresentation of the Buddha's teaching.
It's extermination of the five aggregates of clinging.
Yeah, that we can say like that. Yeah.
Those, yeah.
So the clinging is abandoned, the ignorance is abandoned,
extinguished.
But not a person being abandoned.
Yes.
Not a being is abandoned, or a being is exterminated, or being is destroyed.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that there are some, you know, Buddhist teachers out there who don't really like the idea of rebirth, because it kind of doesn't line up with like modern science or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, even the Buddha, you know.
Yeah, these are different ways of. I mean, now when we are talking about the Sammāditti, the correct view, so there are two forms of correct view, Sammāditti.
Mm-hmm.
So the mundane type of Sammāditti and the supramundane type of Sammāditti. In the mundane type of Sammāditti is completely based on the karma, and you believe as a person, so that's why it still has some amount of ignorance. Sasava, Punya Bhagya, Upadi Vepanka. So that is the three terms, few terms representing them. Sasava means still some fetters are there, still some influxes are there.
This is mundane right view.
Mundane right view.
Okay, yeah.
Punya Bhagya. And you do, as a good person, you are doing, say, telling the correct thing, you are preaching Dhamma, or you are giving dana and you are helping others as a good being, as a good person. I am so and so, I am doing good things. But you are doing good things. So those are subjected to some amount of giving you good fruits in the future.
Mm-hmm.
If you are doing good, you are getting the good results.
Mm-hmm.
So based upon that principle, the karma, sasava punya bhagya upadive pakka. So you are receiving the merit, you are receiving the fruits. But on the other hand, when you are talking about the supramundane samadhiti, right view, say Deva Buddha mentioned Arya Lokuttara Magganga, Arya Anasava Lokuttara Magganga. Arya, so it's completely noble, Anasava, completely free from any kind of influxes. Lokuttara, it is supramundane and it is a path factor. So there you are even recognizing how eye making, mind making can happen. So internally, how the sense of I am is arising when you are conducting certain amount of task. But in the previous case, you may be even encouraging that. You want to again and again enjoy that. You are rejoicing about what you have done as a person. I did this task, I decided I'm the one doing that. So likewise, that is in the mundane side. But here in the supramundane side, you are kind of penetrating even that self-view.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I think also, like, if rebirth wasn't a central core theme or teaching in the Buddha's teachings, it was, I don't know if this is right, but perhaps some people, they wouldn't even feel the need to kind of change their mind, because if you just die at death, it's like you have
that's
you
true.
Have no need to worry about, like, anything.
Exactly.
You just die.
So, that's right. I mean, if you are prematurely thinking there is no self here, then it is, you are going to, in the kind of, a, even can be going through a wrong view.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there is no person, then why worry? I can do whatever I like.
Yeah, if there's no, like, consequences, if there's
no
rebirth.
I mean, you're not believing in consequences.
Die at death, you know, it's like, I'm not, some people may just be like, yeah, why do I need to, like, change my mind? I can just do whatever I do.
Exactly. So why I bother if there is no person? So people are arguing even like that. So they are even arguing like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, I mean, when we are discussing Dhamma, so these higher teachings, you can grasp or you can understand when you come to a certain level of understanding. So prematurely applying this teaching to the person who is still having this lot of ignorance and craving and all these things, and if we try to apply that teaching to himself, not going to work. Then it's a kind of a misrepresentation. Now, say, for example, he is with a lot of ignorance, a lot of conceit, craving, and all these defilements are there. And even though he says there is no person, if there is no person here, then why worry? I am going to kill you. I am going to whatever the thing I like. So like that, he is behaving. But the point is, his ignorance is available, craving is available, that takes care of giving him the whole amount of repercussions, consequences. And mere statement is not enough. Mere statement, say, is not enough. So we have to comprehend, we need to fully realize the thing. So we have to continue the path and then again and again realize how there is no person here, there is no being here. So likewise, so when one becomes such kind of a penetrative, with such kind of penetrative knowledge, then it's a different case. Then probably he can further understand, even though still I have sense of I am, still I am sure there is no person here. Still due to some ignorance within me, I is there. Sense of I is there. So that's what we discuss. That's what discussed by the Venerable Kemaka.
Mm-hmm.
So Venerable Kemaka is telling, I am not recognizing these five aggregates as myself. I am not individually recognizing form aggregates as myself, feeling aggregate as myself, formations aggregate as myself, but sense of I am still with me. Then how to overcome that? Practice. again and again, further and further practicing, then further and further that sense of I am, the conceit I am, is also abandoned.
It's like a gradual
fading,
fading away.
Gradual
yeah.
fading away, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Bhante, I had another question about the Dhamma. Could you just again go over, I guess, the Dhamma follower and the faith follower? Like, what are the faith follower is somebody who practices based on
faith.
Mere faith alone? Like they
not mere faith. We can't say mere faith. Because when you come to this Saddhanusari, Dhammanusari level, so one important thing is that he would be able to distinctly recognize these spiritual faculties.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a practitioner now. He's a practitioner. He know what is the within his own mind. He can distinctly recognize, okay, now faith, a kind of a quality in the mind is available. This is faith.
Mm-hmm.
There's a quality in the mind available. This is okay. This is mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
This is wisdom. This is effort. So likewise, within his own mind, he can distinctly recognize. But say, normal people, so they don't have these faculties. Right? I mean, they may have, ignorance or whatever we can say, kamachanda, vyapada, so they have the defilements, they have the kind of hindrances. But instead of hindrances, now this person has faculties in his mind. He's developing purposely these faculties. And he can recognize, okay, what is faith? What is effort? What is mindfulness? What is concentration? What is wisdom? He can recognize.
Right.
And among these five, the faith follower is leading by the faith. Dhamma follower is leading, headed by the wisdom.
Okay, so the faith follower has more faith, is like their strongest kind of
Exactly.
Whereas the Dhamma follower, the wisdom is their strongest
exactly.
quality. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the point.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah. Okay. That's the end of questions from our side, Jennifer.
Yes. Thank you, Bhante. There was one question that was submitted in advance. It says, with respect, Bhante, generally we're told to disregard samatha inclination and pretty dry vipassana is encouraged. Why? Late Venerable Jnanarama was supportive of samatha, including jhana. I have no doubt that deep experience of rupa jhana or arupa ayatana can strongly boost insight. Personally, while I feel that I'm taught to skillfully walk on one leg, while actually there's a second leg. This is a simile, Bhante.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could use both legs.
Mm-hmm.
Vata and Vipassana. Please comment, Bhante.
Yeah. So, I mean, time to time you can practice both. So, it depends on the individual. So, I mean, say, sometimes we can't immediately practice Vipassana. On such situations, it is good to practice certain amount of Samatha. So, that's why, say, if you are practicing Buddha Anusati, if you are practicing Metta, if you are practicing Asubha, Maranasati, or whatever the enjoyable type of samatha practices, so those are time to time you can use depending on the situation of the mind. But later, definitely you need to switch to vipassana. So even when you are doing vipassana, sometimes, as you mentioned, sometimes your mind can become very dry. So not having enough encouragement. So at that time you can switch back to samatha and you can further give a little bit of an upliftment, kind of a boost to the mind. So that is well explained in the Bhikkhuna Upasaya Sutta. So Buddha used the terms like panidhaya bhavana and apanidhaya bhavana. In the panidhaya bhavana is where you have a kind of a object, you have a kind of an intention, you have a wish, you have kind of an aim. So that is the panidhaya bhavana. So you are practicing samatha meditation. The apanidhaya bhavana, so you are practicing kind of a more penetrative knowledge, satipatthana and all these things. So that is where the apanidhaya bhavana. So Buddha mentioned, so while you are continuing satipatthana practice, if you feel a little bit of dry, if you feel that you need certain kind of encouragement, you need to, you know, very much like pat yourself and give a little bit of boost. You need to have a smile. You need to have a laugh. So all these things are necessary. It's kind of a lubricant. So in order to do that, you can again switch back to samatha and practice a little bit of samatha and make yourself tranquil. Then you can again switch back to vipassana. So this is possible, no problem. It's difficult to understand. There is some problem at your side. Somewhat possible now.
Is it like echoing or not clear?
Kind of interruptions are there. Anyway, you continue. We'll try to pick it.
It's a question about the practitioner and the faith person. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Big sense. Like I did understand the last reply you gave to the other Bhante. So Bhante, my question is, in a situation like that, the faith person, because we meet in the society so many of those for genuine reason they have no time or to practice.
Mm-hmm.
So my question would be, Bhante, for the faith person, at what time will the practice come? Or is it, have they already practiced in their previous life? Or is it when they reach into a higher level?
Actually, it depends, it seems. That if you are, say you may have a little bit of faith, you still are not having time to practice. So you can't assure what's going to happen. It's quite of very uncertain. That's why sometimes people have a lot of faith on the Buddha, but they are not really practicing for themselves. As I mentioned, distinctly recognizing the faculties, spiritual faculties in one's mind is something significant. They are still not sotapanna even, but they can understand, okay, this is faith, this is wisdom, this is effort, this is mindfulness. So likewise, they have experienced these qualities for themselves, so they can recognize. So that is the level they can become Saddhanusari and Dhammanusari, any of these two. Till that, you are very much uncertain. And your faith can be even diverted to something else, because these faith characters, so still their faith is very much superficial, not really based on the facts. So if someone is capable, they can come and convince him to some other belief, and they may have the faith on that belief even later. Therefore, their path is not that certain. But here Buddha's argument is, if they are continuing the faith, till they die, they are not having any kind of such divergence. Rather, they continuously having the faith on the Buddha, continuously having the faith on the Dhamma, the Sangha, but not to the level of the faculties, but a kind of a mere faith is there, and they die with that. Sure, they may be reborn in the heaven.
Right. And then based on the karmic result, they could be again born in another life or back as a human, and then somehow...
It can go up and down. It can go even up and down.
Yeah.
Now say you are going and assume that you are reborn as a human being again, but you got wrong association with some bad friends and you become completely deprived from these good qualities. You have no faith and you are now following another religion, or rather another teacher, another belief, and you can even go to a completely wrong place even. That's why very, very uncertain. Very, very uncertain. Till one becomes fairly confident. Okay, and this is the path. Okay, I'm now sure what needs to be done. Not a kind of an overestimation. He himself has to continue. And with some practical experience, he has to continue. And then one can be little sure, okay, I'm mostly be free from the kind of falling through the to the hell realm, I may be free from now.
Yes, yes. Thank you, Bhante. Yeah, yes,
yeah.
I understand it now.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
Bhante, I'm looking forward to attend one of the retreats while you are in Australia. Meet you soon in this one.
Okay. Teruvan Sannai.
Teruvan Sannai.
Thank you, Jennifer. Hello, Bhante. Can you
yes.
hear me?
Yes, yes.
Hello. I'd like to ask you a question I have about the practice. So I've been trying to and succeeding in, when I go to sit, to just plunge into the open awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that I can be sort of aware, and the question I have is with the consciousness aggregate, I guess I don't quite understand, is the awareness the consciousness? Like the consciousness aggregate, is that the awareness? Is that the same thing?
Yeah. Now, actually, this is an interesting question. Now, typically, the consciousness aggregate and the other aggregates are working together, and in the typical clinging environment, say consciousness aggregate either associate a form aggregate, either associate feelings aggregate, either associate perception aggregate, or either associate formations aggregate. For example, say you are looking at a flower and you are enjoying that, you are completely sort of attached to that, attracted to that. So that is where the consciousness aggregate is associating the form aggregate. Suppose you are going through some kind of an experience that is so blissful. I mean, you are feeling really happy, really elated. So that is where the consciousness aggregate is fairly trapped in the feeling aggregate. And suppose you are remembering certain past incident and you are taking one after the other various different episodes, different memories, so all these different images, mental images particularly, say happening in your mind, are really interesting, really encouraging, and your mind is now fully enjoying those things, and you are now dealing with the perceptions aggregate. And suppose now you are thinking, various thoughts are coming one after the other, you are thinking about the past, the future, the present, various things, and etc., etc., thinking is going on and on. Now you are very much enjoying the formations aggregate. Now this is the typical way of operation of the aggregates. So all these different levels, the consciousness aggregate is very much conditioned, very much associating, very much trapped in the cases. But here, through the vipassana, through the satipatthana practice, you are coming to a stage where you are having kind of an open awareness, where there is any grasping. So mind is fairly free, fairly not associating any aggregates. Now say you are not particularly locating or positioning your attention onto a flower and you are not involving in that, you are not attached to that. Rather, you may have a kind of unestablished awareness surrounding the whole environment. So you can't say that you are attached or hooked up with the materiality aggregate or the form aggregate. Similarly, there are various feelings are coming and going, but I mean they are coming and going. You are not fully hooked up with them. You are not fully bound to them. Time to time, various perceptions may happen. Various mental images are happening, so they are coming and going, and it is not a kind of an imprisoning of your consciousness to them either. Thoughts are also coming and going, but they are not really mastering the mind. They are not driving you. So very much like your mind is very clean, very clear, your mind is quite spacious. So at that level, so the consciousness is, we can't define in the previous way, rather consciousness is very much now trying to be unestablished. So it is, I mean, you can't say your attention, your focus is very much located on this particular object, rather it is objectless kind of an awareness. So the consciousness is operating in a different level at that level. So that is why when one is becoming an arahant, that is the complete fulfillment of this operation. That is where the Buddha mentioned, at that level your consciousness is completely unestablished. It is not trapped in any kind of name and form. And even if someone is trying to locate it, that's why the consciousness of one thus gone is supported by this. That's one can't say. It is not supported by anything. It is free.
I think I understand. When I'm in the open awareness, I feel that everything is happening inside the awareness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
Most of the day, I kind of feel like I'm inside the thing, if that would make sense. Like my awareness is inside the perception, in a sense. But other times it feels like the perception is inside the awareness. Like there's
Much like the awareness is kind of a pervaded kind of awareness, very spacious awareness, spreaded kind of awareness. So that is what sometimes Buddha mentioned about, vimariyadi katena chetasa. So there are no boundaries.
That's right.
Yeah. No boundary to the consciousness. So here the awareness. So kind of a very light, very soft kind of awareness. There is no boundary to that. So that is very much the path Buddha is talking.
So when he says consciousness is not I,
that's right.
So there, because in the awareness, in that open awareness, where I feel that the perceptions are inside the awareness, but the awareness is boundless. I guess it's not. It doesn't. It's tricky because in those moments, I will then try at times to explain, like, how would I explain this? I find myself saying, how would I explain what is happening right now in this moment? And then I'm looking for this sense of I, like, who is explaining this?
Yeah.
Who is taking note of this? And so that, I guess that question comes up, is this, how to explain this? And then it keeps coming back to this, well, who is explaining this?
Yeah,
and
so actually that is where, we are purposely making a self. While you are experiencing that unattached state, so there is no sense of self. There is no any kind of eye-making, mind-making. Because you are fully, mind is not grasping anything. So without grasping, there is no eye-making. That is a kind of a very interesting teaching given by Punnamanthaniputta. I think we discussed that also. Where Buddha mentioned, or Venerable Punnamanthaniputta mentioned, that upadayatiko avusvananda asmiti hoti no anupadaya. So when... Only when the clinging is there, the sense of I am will happen, not without clinging. So while you are in the kind of that open awareness, where the mind is not established anywhere, there is no grasping at all. So that means the kind of a personality you can't feel. You are simply living. You are in a very, very friction-free mindset. So mind is simply being aware. That's it. So I like to add here, Joseph, another interesting sutta. That is the Kalakarama Sutta, well explained in the Magic of the Mind book by Most Venerable Katukurunde Nyanananda Mahathero. So here, in the Kalakarama Sutta, so this statement. So with regard to all our experiences, Buddha highlights, thing apart from sight, he does not conceive of an unseen. he does not conceive of a thing worth seeing. He does not conceive about a seer. Can you pick here? Now you can see.
Yeah.
Now this it is again. Thus, monks, Tathagata does not conceive of a visible thing as apart from sight. It is merely the seeing. The process is happening, but there is no thing. There is no something that he is seeing. So that is one area. And thinking that there is something, he is not conceiving. The next point is, he does not conceive of an unseen. Thinking that I couldn't see it, I should see it again, I unfortunately missed that. That is also conceived.
Right.
And here also Buddha mentioned, so he is not conceiving with regard to unseen. And he does not conceive of a thing worth seeing. Now he has future plans, so I am going to see this, I am going to see that. Even there, he is not conceiving. And the last statement is more valid, more important to you. He does not conceive about a seer. Now here also, with respect to others, he does not conceive with regard about a hearer. He does not conceive with regard one who is senseless, and he does not conceive about one who cognizes. You see, this is a very, very interesting sutta. So where Buddha very beautifully negate all these possibilities of self-making or I-making.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's really worth reading this Magic of the Mind book if you have...
Magic of the Mind.
So,
Magic of the Mind.
Yeah. So this is the book I'll show you. So this one. This book.
Oh, Bhikkhu
Vinyananda. Bhikkhu Vinyananda. Magic of the Mind.
Magic. There's a screenshot there.
Yeah.
There's another book that talks on this is No Boundary by Ken Wilber.
Ken Wilber.
I love that book. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, he speaks of that because there's no seer, there's no seen, there's just seeing.
That's it.
There's no boundary. That
exactly. So the Kalagarama Sutta. In the Kalagarama Sutta, Buddha explained that very beautifully. So Venerable Jnanananda, excellently he is explaining this thing in the Magic of the Mind book.
Thank you very much, Pante.
Thank you
very much.
Sure.
Okay, Pante. I have another written question here.
Yeah.
Respected Bhante, 1 year ago, my meditation kind of collapsed. Reporting didn't help. Now, recently, I was able to solve personal issues, which obviously have been burdening me more than I was aware. Thereafter, meditation immediately went back to normal as it was before it collapsed 1 year ago. Most venerable Dhammajiva rejects general life reports, calls them cock and bull stories, but they can help understanding meditation problems. Life and meditation are not two split things. Why not integrating?
We can't hear you, Jennifer. Last statement. They are not integrating.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Last statement. Oh yeah. Okay. So, the question is,
So life and meditation are not integrating or integrating what?
They're not two split things. So why not integrate them?
Yeah. Definitely, they have to be integrated. So that's an interesting book, again written by. Dr. Thinting, Living Meditation. Living Meditation. So actually we translate that into Sinhala, Jeevitema Bhavanavaki. So the original book is by Dr. Thinting, Living Meditation. So basically the life and, you know, life experiences are happening. I mean, we are all living. And time to time meditation can go up and down. But slowly you become more stable, more you become more confident. So then only, I mean, you feel okay, fairly some, now the mind has become stable. Otherwise, up and downs are possible in our practice.
Okay. I'd like to invite Chita Devi.
Thank you, Jennifer. Now, Bhante, in this series, you spoke about the doer and just being.
Mm-hmm.
And what I just wanted to ask you was that when I'm meditating, sometimes I just very quickly go through those stages of, you know, what we used to do, looking at the breath and all this kind of thing, but those things go quite quickly, and when I come to a sort of a peaceful mind, I just don't do anything. I don't do the vipassana either. I just observe what is coming. Like if it's the breath, I just observe that, and if there is any vipassana there, like arising and passing away, or if a feeling comes, like a pleasant feeling, it arises and passes away. What I'm trying to say is I just observe what comes. I don't do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be okay from your point of view?
Yeah, I mean, that's okay. Because you are in the present moment, you are experiencing what is happening, and you are fully aware, and you are not grasping.
Yes, because earlier I used to go into the vipassana and, you know, see all these things and go into a deeper level. But I don't think that's necessary now, Bhante.
Good, no problem. That's why, I mean, more we become confident, more we are sure. So now mind is very much ready to give up or ready to let go without much effort. So previously mind still has the tendency to grasp, tendency to hold, tendency to proliferate. So those tendencies are still powerful. So therefore we need to further guide the mind, direct the mind. But later, now mind is somewhat confident and they are simply coming and going. We don't have to struggle.
Yes, and I don't think I need to. I don't know whether I'm doing it correctly. That's why I'm asking you. I don't want to say this is impermanent or this is nonsense.
No need. No need.
It's just not necessary.
Yes.
So now it's like a very shortcut because I don't have to do anything very much.
Correct.
I know that I'm quite mindful in the sense I start with the breath and it's very sharp, you
mm-hmm.
know, very, I can see those, you know, that Venerable Dhammajiva used to say, you know, watch this, the nature of the air, you know, I can see that quite clearly, but
mm-hmm.
Then after that, I don't think I come to a very peaceful mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I just see, you know, there are things that come. I mean, not that there's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
There are things that come, but then I just know, now this is a nice feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It is arising and passing away, and mm-hmm. also the body is, you know, arising and passing away, the whole body like.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all I do now, Bhante.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm quite comfortable with that. Would that be okay from your point of view?
Yes. Because the thing
so
is...
So I just continue like that.
Yeah, continue. And basically you can verify that in general, if your mind is now more and more free from conceptual proliferation, less thinking, less burdening,
yes.
and you feel lighter, you feel your mind is becoming more spacious, and even though you see things, mind is not interested of going and attaching with them, going and getting involved with them. Mind likes to be alone. Mind has its own kind of peaceful abiding. So all these things are there, so then we are in the correct direction.
Yes, because I think I spoil that by trying to investigate like
mm.
I used to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to leave it alone now. And
yeah.
I just want to say, and I don't know whether I just slip into a samatha
level.
I don't know, that's why I'm asking.
Yeah.
Because sometimes the mind is so peaceful
mm-hmm.
That then you can go into like a samatha. So that's why I'm asking.
Yeah, this is very much like samatha. I agree with that. But the point is, this form of samatha is based upon wisdom. that you are not effortfully keeping your mind in a concentrated state. Rather, here mind is not grasping anything. As a result of that, mind is quite spacious, quite tranquil.
So that's all right then. I've been in that situation, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's good then. That's good, Bhante. Thank you for that.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think that's the last question on our side here, Bhante.
Okay, good. So then we are going to conclude today's Dhamma sermon, and we are going to start the next live session in the month of May, and hope Jennifer may play certain recordings during the month of April. So, and today also we have discussed certain amount of Dhamma, and we have listened to certain teachings of the Buddha, and all these good things may have generated a certain amount of merits. We share these merits with all the past relatives, we share these merits with all the celestial beings, and we share these merits with whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to attain path, fruition, Nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambhataṁ punya sampadaṁ sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiyā. Ettavata ca amhehi sambhataṁ punya sampadaṁ sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiyā. Ettavata ca amhehi sambhataṁ punya sampadaṁ sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiyā. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu desanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu mamparam. Idangvo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idangvo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idangvo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamu. Satang samagamu hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamu. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.